Brett, it's Jason Grom, not Groom. And I would really appreciate it if you would pronounce players' names correctly on this podcast.
I have heard this and I don't believe it.
A bold and brave stance. Episode 72 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I'm your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. So good evening, guys. Nice to have the crew back together again. Thank you for speaking to Jim without me last week. Brett, on a scale from 1 to the Padres draft, how happy are you to be here tonight?
Why is the Padres draft not 1?
I was under the impression they had a not stellar draft, but I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm here to...
Well, yes, but when you do a 1 to 10, 10 is the best, right?
Yes, so if you're happy to be here, you'd be a 1.
I'd be a 10.
This is off to a great start. This is
not how scales work.
I like it.
Yeah.
Craig, on a scale from 1 to that being confusing, how happy are you to be here tonight?
I'm Brett's opinion on breakfast to be here.
Oh, wow. Okay, maybe we'll get into that a little later, but I'm not there yet. I need to warm up before I handle takes that hot.
I'm sorry.
Instead, what?
I said I'm sorry. I came out firing.
Yeah, you really did. You were like Brett this morning on GChat, just 9:30 a.m. throwing out the French toast takes. Okay, so this week we are not going to talk about breakfast exclusively. We are also going to talk about the 2016 MLB draft, which happened last Thursday. And instead of podcasting, you know, as it was happening, we just decided to smugly GChat each other instead, give ourselves a week to sort of process everything. And what I mean by that is wait for Brett's top 40 rankings to come out so that we can talk about it with you guys tonight. So for the third year in a row, we are going to do the Tino post-draft mock draft, which pretty simple format. Basically, anybody drafted last week is eligible. The three of us will just take turns and take the players that we like best in order, and we'll do a little discussion in the midst of each round. Before we get started, I just want to ask you guys one or two quick questions about this draft class as a whole. Craig, how would you say this class compares to the last like two or three classes we've discussed just in terms of Dynasty League players?
It's really pretty light from my point of view. And, you know, this is something that I kind of brought up with Jim, was that I thought the draft on the whole was kind of getting not necessarily unfairly slammed, but I didn't think it was that bad in terms of depth so much as it was just kind of messy at the top. I don't think that's the case from a dynasty perspective, because as Brett kind of talks about in his article on it, it's a lot of pitching, and that's just not really what you're looking for when you're talking about the draft. And there haven't been a ton of great, you know, hitters right out of the draft. There's always been a couple in these last couple few drafts, but this one seems really light on it. And even where some of the good hitters went, you're not exactly confident based on the org and the fit in terms of development that they're going to make the most of it. So I think it's a pretty rough look, at least, you know, a week or so out.
Right. Brett, I know something we've talked about is sort of the concept of, was it a good draft for Dynasty League owners? You know, I think last year we talked about how it sort of was. You know, you had Brendan Rodgers landing in Houston, trying to think of other examples. I know there were more. I feel like we had some pitchers end up with teams who are good at developing pitchers. It seems like, you know, some things aligned well for Dynasty League owners last year. Did you think that was the case this year as well, or is it too early to say, or is it sort of somewhere in between?
No, I mean the way that some of the organizations that have stereotypes go, it was a pretty shitty draft, at least as far as translating to dynasty value and in terms of the way it could have gone. You know, you have the Rockies taking a pitcher, which is it, just in the first round. You have the Rockies taking a pitcher, which is bad. You have the Mariners taking a hitter, which is bad. There are a number of examples of that. On down the line. The places where you wanted things to match up were not great. The only places where you got good matchups a little bit was towards the top, when there were a lot of attractive places for hitters to go, and most of them, pretty much all of the entire top five, was you know, pretty decent places for hitters to go, and they only one pitcher went in the top five. So it could have been worse, but it's not good.
For sort of a metaphor for life. Okay, so we will do. We were discussing how deep we want to go before the podcast, and what we're going to do is do a 7-round draft. Obviously, that means we'll talk about 21 players. That sort of plays off what Craig was talking about. You know, it's just not a particularly deep class, and we don't want to waste your time by talking about players who, you know, you probably wouldn't even be touching in you know, leagues where you're rostering only about 150 prospects. We will touch on a few guys who didn't get drafted at the end, you know, guys who either fell out completely or who we find interesting. But we're basically going to just discuss these 21 players. And so the random order that I created using one of those stupid random number generator things, not RJ Anderson, a real one online, was that Brett will go first, then me, and then Craig. And I'm assuming we'll do a snake draft. Does that make sense, or does it not make sense since there are only three of us?
No, that makes sense.
Okay, we will snake draft away then. And for those of you listening at home, if a lot of the analysis sounds quite a lot like what Brett just wrote earlier today, it's a total coincidence. Craig and I have very well formed opinions of our own. So Brett, let's lead off with you. The first overall pick in the 2016 post draft Tino draft is
that would be Corey Ray of the Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah, obviously he was number one on my list at BP. You know, for mostly the reason that I think he is the safest fantasy play available in the draft. You know, there are college hitters that are slightly safer, power producers, slightly safer hit tools, but you know, Ray has the speed to match that, and you know, when you add the rest of his game and the fact that he should move reasonably quickly to the fact that he could steal 30 plus bases, I think he's, you know, while he's not the type of talent you would necessarily expect to get out of a 1-1 pick, he's the best bet for this year. Yeah, I'm curious to get Craig. Do you guys think, rather than just move on from this, do you guys think that Ray is the top guy here? Because I don't think it's really clear cut at all.
I think he is, and I do think it's pretty clear cut. I'm not. I mean, I guess the gap isn't that huge, but it's also not, the gap in value isn't huge, but it's also distinct to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I had an easier time picking one than I did two or three. Mm-hmm. If that, like, I feel like there's a clearer distinction with Ray than there is the next little group of guys.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good.
That almost seems like a good segue for me to pick next. Is what I would do if I was hosting. I'm going to go way off Brett's board here, and I'm going to go with Nick Senzel, who went to the Reds, and it's definitely a little bit of a safe pick, which I think is a theme you're going to hear echoed throughout this draft. I did consider Collins, because Zach Collins, who went to the White Sox, because even if he loses catcher eligibility and has to be a first baseman. There really aren't as many good first basemen for fantasy as you would think anymore, so that's not, to me, quite the death knell it used to be. But given Senzel's park and the fact that he's a fairly advanced college bat and that he does play third base, I'm comfortable taking him, even though I realize that he's, you know, maybe more of a top 10 third baseman someday than a top 5 third baseman. Anyone think that's just an egregious choice? Just want to boot me from the draft right now?
He's not my favorite. Anyway? He's not my favorite, but I do think it makes sense. I kind of feel like he's Jesse Winker at third base, which is obviously a lot more valuable than Jesse Winker is now. And I know I'm relatively low on Winker, especially compared to Brett, but I think it makes sense given kind of the other options.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair statistical comp there. I think that works pretty well.
Do you guys envision Senzel as someone who's going to move quickly, Brett?
Yeah, I think he's got one of the most advanced hit tools in the class, probably the second most advanced of anybody available. So I would. Yeah, especially with the competition he faced in college, I would expect him to move as quickly as, you know, almost anybody in this class.
All right, Craig, it is to you for two.
Yeah, so I'm going to make a departure on Brett's board here. I'm going to take Kyle Lewis third. He's the guy I took. I have the AL and NL only league that drafts immediately after the draft. And so I've actually already drafted in both of those leagues. And I took Lewis ahead of Collins there as well. So this is an actual choice I made. And it's just something where I really like the player. And I am worried about the organizational fit. And I, you know, wish there was a little more speed and less questions about swing and miss in his profile. But, you know, as we're going to realize, like, this just, at this point, everyone's pretty flawed, and there's just not a ton to bank on, and I really like his power. And I'm hoping the Mariners can kind of overcome some of their organizational deficiencies under DePoto that, you know, he's still relatively new there. So I guess there's some optimism there. And the other person I was potentially comparing him to, and I realize I can take both since I have two picks, but, you know, you talk about a guy like Zach Collins, and he's a great bat, and there's the slight potential he has eligibility at catcher, but the White Sox might be worse at developing positional talent than anyone but the Mariners at this point. They have Tim Anderson, and I think before him, the last decent player that they've developed, who's not a pitcher, was Joe Creedy or Aaron Rowan. So...
Yeah, Gordon Beckham
somewhere
had two
Gordon
good years.
Beckham's heart is breaking.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gordon Beckham. Okay. Well, yeah. But that's not a flag to plant. And, you know, let's not die on Gordon Beckham Hill. I think Aaron Rowand is probably better than Gordon Beckham was.
I would absolutely agree with that.
That's very fair.
So
come
okay,
for the
so
Tino
Lewis
2016 draft where we talk about Aaron Rowand and Gordon Beckham. The best draft analysis on the planet.
Okay, so Lewis first, and you know what? But I'm gonna double down on bad orgs, and I'm gonna take Collins second. I know he's third on Brett's board. I just the thing is that he can hit, and if there's even a chance he can catch, you know, that's huge value. I think he can hit enough to justify first base, and you know, you're just it at this point. You know, at some point. We always harp on positional value and stuff like that, but on some point, you know, bankable stats are bankable stats, and I think he should be able to hit. And the plus side is that he should be an advanced bat, and the White Sox are relatively aggressive, so he has the potential to contribute pretty quickly. I mean, I see him kind of potentially up there with Senzel in terms of fast movers. Does that make sense to you, Brett?
Yeah, I think Collins might be the fastest mover in the entire class. I think there is a good chance we could see him in the second half of next year.
Okay, wow.
But that also depends on how. That also depends how serious the White Sox are about developing him at catcher. If they really think they can develop him at catcher, he'll take longer. But if they just kind of get him in and say, okay, let's stick you at first base or just hit and then go out there, I think he could definitely make it next year.
Okay.
The White Sox have Dionner Navarro though, so there's really no reason to try Collins at catcher.
Oh, of course not. Superstar defensive and offensive player Dionner Navarro.
He does rank very. Yeah, I'm sorry. Navarro does rank very highly in our face metric, though, which is something that's important to consider for those of you in weird fucking formats. Okay, so on the wraparound, this is pretty easy for me. I'm going to go with Mickey Moniak, who was the first overall pick to the Phillies. For a prep hitter, I feel like he's fairly safe and will not take as long as a lot of other prep outfielders that we've seen. I realize that, you know, we still could be talking about maybe like a three and a half season lead time, but hopefully it's something more like 2.5. And you know, I am a big believer in when in doubt, go for the hit tool, and when that comes with reasonable speed and a little bit of pop as well. I'm fairly happy, especially because in my eyes, I think this sort of represents the end of a tier. I think there's a drop off between Moniak and whoever I would consider next. So, Brett, do you agree with that, or are you overjoyed to now be picking 6th and 7th?
No. Moniak was the top player remaining on my board, so I think that was a very strong pick, Ben.
I agree. I think it was just, to this point, I would argue it's a steal of the draft.
Might be. That means I'm up next for 2, right?
Yes.
Sounds good. So I am going to just for fuck's sake, I am going to take Matt Theis with my next pick. I will take him 6th. Like Ben said, with Moniak. You know, when in doubt, lean towards the hit tool. And I think Theis might have the best hit tool in this draft class. And I think he has underrated power too. I think power gets a little bit, undersold at UVA just because it's not a great place to hit for power. But I think, whether he ends up at catcher or not, and I think he has a good enough chance to stick that they should try it. Even if he is a first baseman, I think offensively he's good enough that he's a above average first baseman and can move really, really quickly. After that, I will then just completely shoot for the moon and take Jason Groom, the 12th overall pick from the Red Sox. I think he is the best pitcher available in this draft, and yeah, there's talk and risk that he might not sign. I still think it's unlikely that he doesn't sign, but the upside is just so much higher than anyone else's in this draft class. He's really the only guy who has true SP1 upside. That's not, you know, there are one or two other guys later that kind of have it as a little bit of a pipe dream. Groom's the guy who has it and you can actually visualize it. So what do you guys think? Craig, I heard you booing when I took Theis, so I want to hear the reason for the booing.
I think you're right. The hit tool is there and that's fine. But if I'm not as big a believer in the power, and if he's going to be a first baseman, which, and this is not at all definitive, but the Angels are only playing him at first base, I believe, at least the rest of this season, it seems like. I know I talked to you about that. Was that an accurate representation of what I read, or am I misreading it?
I don't think that they're going to play him exclusively at first base. I think they're going to play him predominantly at first base.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. But that's not a great sign to me for his their like desire to keep him at catcher. It certainly could be that, you know, they think he had a long season and they want to save his legs and let him get back to it next year. But, you know, usually you'd think they'd want to work with him on his mechanics and get him into good habits at catcher, you know, as soon as possible. So I might be reading way too much into that, but if it's a questionable power first baseman, you know, I don't know. Sounds like some other guys that you've loved in the past that I disagree with you about. So,
yeah, I was going to say, when was the last time we argued back and forth about a 21-year-old first baseman who might not hit for power?
It's so weird. Yeah.
It's, at least so, one of them is so in double weird. A.
Yeah. And yeah, we'll not we don't need to quite speak of that. The only thing I will say is that, you know, and I am absolutely not making the comparison as players, just potentially developmentally. You know, the Cubs did play Kyle Schwarber predominantly in the outfield when they sent him to the Pioneer League after he drafted. They got him a lot of reps and development at catcher in the instructional league, and then kind of went from there. So I just, because I know it will make people nervous when they see the first base. Maybe he does play exclusively first base, but I'm not giving up on him having a chance to catch long term, even if he doesn't play catcher this summer.
All right, well, I'm going to move us on to my next pick, but before we do, I've always wanted to do this. Brett, it's Jason Grom, not Groom, and I would really appreciate it if you would pronounce players' names correctly on this podcast. I will not stand for a mispronunciation of player names.
I have heard this, and I don't believe it.
Okay, that I can respect. I can respect just flat out not listening. That's what I do often.
See, for me, it's not even about not believing it. I don't respect it.
Well, I didn't say I respect it. I clearly don't respect it either. But yeah, no, that's not happening. If you want to hear someone say Groom, listen to when Crawford was on Effectively Wild. He says it a lot, and it just sounds horribly wrong every time he says it, and I refuse to do it.
Yeah,
a bold and brave stance. Okay, with the eighth pick, I promise at some point I would go off Brett's board, but this is also a fairly easy selection to me. I'm going to go with AJ Puck, who fell, quote-unquote, to the Athletics at the sixth pick and is the eighth pick here. I get kind of a Sean Newcomb vibe in terms of a Dynasty League prospect. Is that somewhat accurate?
Not really. I think Puck is not as concerning from a walk standpoint as Newcomb is, but you know, I understand where that idea comes from. I think he's got as much upside as Newcomb, but with a little bit less risk.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking sort of big lefty with mostly command issues. If you had to pinpoint a flaw, He's going to a good park, but has developed some good pitchers, especially in the college ranks as of late. So, you know, I'm happy with it here. Hopefully he can grow into a number three-ish fantasy starter. And if not, you know, he does certainly have the stuff to excel in the bullpen. So not the sexiest pick at eight overall, but one I don't feel terrible about. Craig?
Yeah, I will take Delvin Perez. He's a shortstop. I think, obviously, the PED test is not ideal. It's not really what you want to see, and maybe it means the power that he showed previously isn't there, but he's got a really fast bat. I think he can stick it short, and I think he can hit for average. So, you know, if the power happens to be there, then this is a huge steal. And I, you know, maybe it's not likely that that's the case, but I think this has the potential. I think Perez, if the power was there, is a top three pick in this draft if he doesn't get popped for PEDs. I think he's probably top five in the actual draft. And, well, maybe not behind Collins for someone like Brett, but top three, top five type guy in this draft. And it's certainly a question that needs to be answered. It's not ideal, but risk, especially since I really don't see much difference the rest of the way between a lot of these guys. And that's why I'm probably stumbling a little bit. I really don't love the rest of the bats here. But God, I can't bring myself to take an arm right now. I will take Kirilloff. He's ninth on Brett's board. I'm not really a big fan of Kirilloff. I know he's got a great swing. I'm not sure the power even gets to above average. And when you're a corner outfielder, that's kind of a tough sell for me, even in fantasy. And I think there's a long lead time. There's a lot of stuff I don't like here, more than stuff I do. But when I'm looking at guys like Will Craig, who I think ends up at first base, and has, you know, he hit really well in college, but it was a lot of performing at Wake Forest, which is a good place to hit. And Blake Rutherford, Blake Rutherford was probably my other option here, but I'm just not that big a fan of the overall profile, and he didn't perform this year kind of the way that I wanted him to. So I guess I'll just go with Kirilloff. I'm not happy about it though. Anyone have thoughts on those two?
I think you should be a little bit more excited about Kirilloff than you are, but I understand.
Well, I'm not.
This is where you really notice the quality of the draft class is that, you know, right around here, you know, these are sort of names that you would expect to see as second round picks, you know, sort of in the 15 to 20 range, and they're all kind of snuck up to the back end of the top 10 just because, I mean, your alternative is to take a prep arm, and no one wants to take a prep arm.
there are some prep arms I really like, but you know, at some point you're looking at the scarcity of bats and the difference between a prep arm I take with that pick, with that Kirilloff pick, and a guy I'm going to get on the way back is just not big enough for me not to take a chance on a bat.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the difference between the drafting and the straight list comes into play. If it goes back to me, I am going to skip Will Craig for all the reasons that Craig mentioned, and I'm going to go with Blake Rutherford, who, I don't know, basically I'll forget last year happened, and I'll just pretend that he's a really well-rounded and exciting prep bat who's going to a great place to hit. And whenever you bring up 2016, I will ignore you. Brett?
I will not jump over Will Craig, and I will take him at this spot. I think it's perfectly reasonable to be skeptical about Craig and his college performance. But you know, I do think he will hit it. I don't think he's going to be a star. I don't even think I don't think he has the potential to be a star if he stays at third. But I think he could be a borderline top 10 third baseman. So sort of he's about a half a tier down from Senzel if everything works out. If it doesn't, I mean, he might be a guy who plays who might just be a platoon bat at first base, and you know, that is
like
just reasonable.
CJ,
he could be, CJ Cron's not a terrible, I think he could be CJ Cron without hitting his ceiling.
You think he has that type of power?
Well, I don't think Cron has that. I don't think Cron's power is that great. I mean, what you expect him to be a 20 home run guy?
I think Craig could do that. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
So that's
260 and 20 homers? Maybe 270?
Cron has more raw, but probably not usable.
It's definitely not usable.
That's where I was getting hung up. Good call.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't. Yeah, I just don't see the downside as being that far down. I think even if the realistic floor for Craig is still probably a useful fantasy player, unless you're in like a 10 or a 12 team league. The concerns are, and I totally understand it. And the reason why I'm taking him anyway is because, God, there are so many arms now. I'm going to take Braxton Garrett with my next pick. And, you know, trying to cipher through prep arms is just a completely fruitless exercise. So with that said, Garrett is the guy because I think he's the safest. And I think I can get a prep arm later on that has a little bit more upside that probably flames out before he even gets to double A. Garrett has, you know, he doesn't have the premium velocity, which is turning into somewhat of a good thing because that all of a sudden makes him more likely to stay healthy. Although I don't, you know, I know we know that extreme velocity makes makes pitchers more likely to get hurt, but I don't know that Garrett being in the low 90s really makes that much of a difference versus someone who might be a tick higher on the fastball. But you know, Miami's not a bad place to end up, and I think he'll get there faster than some of the other prep arms that will get taken probably before we finish this draft. When we're talking about the non-groom prep arms here, I think it's relatively wide open depending on preference. Craig, do you think Garrett is the best non-groom prep arm in this class?
I do not. But sounds I'm not going to say who. I'm not going to say who because there's a chance I can pick him.
Craig sounds refusing good. So, to give away his competitive advantage in the MLB draft, post-draft, mock draft, whatever we're calling it.
Yeah. Ben, same question to you then, and I guess you don't have to answer it if you want to save it and be curmudgeonly.
I think I would have preferred Riley Pint had he ended up in a different organization, but because he is a Rocky, I would also lean Garrett.
All right, so you are on the clock now.
I don't want to pick. I don't particularly. I don't particularly like any of the options available to me, and I don't want to play anymore. But because I have to play, much like I am just pretending to forget that 2016 happened for Blake Rutherford, I am just pretending to forget that I know anything about Cal Quantrill's elbow, and I will take the pitcher with the high upside who is in San Diego, because that always works out for the Padres. So I'll go for the upside play and the player who theoretically should have a little less lead time than some of the prep arms we're talking about, even though he will probably have a longer lead time than some other college arms. I don't know, like poor man's Jeff Hoffman or something. Craig, your turn.
Okay, so the guy I like the most out of the prep arms is there for me, and he's Matt Manning. I just think that, you know, this could be a really slow burn, but I think he has the potential to be maybe the best arm, the best non-groom arm, arm here. And so I you know, that's another thing where the Tigers, they have a long history of drafting you know, hard throwing pitchers, and so a decent amount of them have become relievers, but I'm comfortable enough with the fit there that I think it could pan out in the long run. And frankly, if I'm going to take a prep arm, the thing I want out of it is ceiling, you know, kind of different with bats. You know, we were talking about earlier about going with safety. With arms, I really want ceiling because, you know, Ben did that whole piece for the Futures Guide a while back about, you know, number three starters and stuff like that. And, you know, it's very convincing. And I'd rather take the chance of this as a guy who can be a front of the fantasy rotation type. So that's where I'm going with Manning. After that, it gets complicated again. God, I don't really like any of the bats. I'm going to go with Justin Dunn. He's one of my favorites. He's right behind Manning on Brett's list at 16th. I really liked him coming out of Boston College. I know Brett is not a huge fan of his, not sure if he can be a starter. I think he can start. The stuff is there to do it. And as everyone knows at this point, I have a thing for shorter starters with big stuff. From, you know, you talk about Finnegan to Carlos Martinez, who's not really that short, but Yordano Ventura, that type. I really like Dunn's breaking ball. He ran it up to 99 out of relief. I think he can start, and if he is a reliever, he could be a pretty good closer, and that's something of a floor. So those are my two. Back to Ben.
Yeah. So if I didn't want to pick last time, now
you really
I want
to
pick. Yeah. Because I do also kind of like Dunn, Craig. That's probably where I would have gone next. But I cannot pick Dunn because you picked Dunn, and we're drafting. So I can't do that anymore. So I am actually somewhat tempted to go Riley Pint here. And I think if he had ended up in maybe any other, literally any other organization, I really think this is who I would take if he was still on the board. But I just cannot bring myself to draft a Colorado Rocky prep arm with questionable command. I can't do that. So I am going to go with Joshua Lowe, because out of the bats that are remaining in this next year, I don't know, I feel like he has the best combination of upside and floor, even if neither his upside nor his floor is particularly thrilling. So very excited about this pick. Joshua Lowe, can't wait to have you aboard.
That leaves me, right?
It does leave you.
Yes, it does.
Well, yeah, this is where it starts to get really painful. And, you know, I do have prep pitchers as the next two guys on my board. But since it's my last two picks, I am going to issue one of them for a hitter because I can. So I am going to take Forrest Whitley, the Astros first round pick. He's a Texan, and he is, you know, essentially what you'd expect. He's got some big stuff. It's not huge. Otherwise, he probably would have been taken earlier. But I like his combination of upside and floor, at least comparatively for a prep pitcher at this point. I think he'll, you know, I think he'll be a solid second round pick for most dynasty drafts this offseason, even when some of the international names are factored in. The other guy I'm going to take is Will Benson. He is certainly a boom or bust guy, but even boom or bust outfielders are still safer than most prep pitchers. So, you know, he's one of the best athletes in the draft. He's enormous. He has the potential for plus power. He can run, although I think he'll slow down as he gets older, because I think he'll grow into his body and get a little bit bigger. But he has the potential to be a high impact outfielder. If you are like me, you are not only into high impact outfielders, but you've really heard him compared to Jason Hayward enough for one lifetime. They are not all that similar in profile. Benson is more of a power hitter, and Hayward obviously hasn't turned out to be as much of a power hitter as we thought. So clearly, if he ends up as a productive major leaguer, it will be a success at this point of this draft. But yeah, I'd rather chance that than take another pitcher. Ben?
All right, I'm finally going off the board. Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
I need you to be excited.
I know who you're taking, though.
Do you know who I'm taking?
I do know who you're taking.
I'm not taking Riley Pint.
But you can't help yourself when it comes to Rockies pitchers.
I'm not taking Riley Pint. I'm not doing it.
You can't help yourself.
I am taking Buddy Reed, because he's very, very fast, and if he can hit even a little bit, I might be able to use him, and because I like his name, and he also went to college and will not, hopefully, take as long as Taylor Trammell, who I also considered here, and Anthony Greer, who I sort of like, but it doesn't have that one uber-carrying tool. So I refuse to take one of your prep pitchers, and I will just pray for speed.
It's actually Taylor Trammell, just so you know.
I'll write this, that down.
This is pretty close to the groom thing. This is.
I just wanted to correct Ben on a pronunciation if I could.
Oh, yeah. Well, you never get that chance, so thank God you pounced on it. Because.
Okay, that's too bad. I was definitely thinking about taking Reed. Let's see. I will go with the aforementioned Anthony Greer. It's the last pick in the draft, so I will go for upside. I'm worried a bit about the hit tool, but the speed is there, and the athleticism is there. So, as you said in the in your write-up, Brett, he's a good gamble as a power speed guy. And, you know, aside from, like I said, I was eyeing Reed. I probably would have gone that way. Aside from him, I would consider, you know, Trammell seems like a big project to me. I'm not sure I want to wait on that. But someone like Brian Reynolds was probably the other guy I was thinking about. Safe guy, you know, when you're this late in the draft, you can kind of think, like, do I want to go safe and just, if I get something out of the seventh round, like, I'm good with it. And that's not a bad way to go. Or if you aim big and hit, you feel even better. So, there, you know, you can kind of go two ways with it. But I went with Greer. I think, you know, like I said, Reynolds or Lux are kind of the other options I was considering there. I know you have your list, but kind of who would you look at there, Brett, out of the remaining options?
I think, I like Carter Kieboom. If you're going to go with not a pitcher, Kieboom, I think has one. He's got a great name, but two, he. Even though he's probably not a shortstop long term, he is another one of those prep hitters with a good hit tool foundation. Who I think is, you know, it makes him reasonably safe. You know, if you're in a deep league at this point, and you know, why would we determine what size league we were doing before we did this? Right, that wouldn't be useful. Which we, but if we're talking about like a 20 team league. I think Lux and Reynolds both become much more interesting. I think they're both really safe picks at this point to be major leaguers, and that's kind of what you want. I mean, no one took Ian Anderson. Were you tempted to take him at any point, Ben?
No. Oh.
Not yet. Not really. I mean, if we had gone to 10 rounds like you originally thought we might do, maybe I could see taking him like with my last pick or something. But he hadn't really entered my thought process yet.
No, I didn't really consider it. I mean, like, you know, you talked about him in there, and I kind of agreed with everything you said. When I read it, it was, you know, it's just he wasn't the third overall talent. He is a decent talent. I'm just not waiting on it for that type of upside. I really don't think he's more than a mid-rotation guy. And as I said, I found Ben's piece very convincing, and it's definitely influenced my actions about, you know, how I go after guys and which guys I go after. So I just don't see more than a mid-rotation guy there, and it's not worth waiting on to me.
Fair enough. Anyone else you guys want to highlight before we call it a podcast?
Ben?
I guess the only other guy that I was going back that I considered that we haven't touched on yet is Nolan Jones. I was a little surprised he fell that late in the second round to the Indians. I don't think he has a terribly high floor, but, you know, as someone who looks like he probably will be able to stay in the infield and who does have maybe 20, 25 homer power in a draft that's this thin, he was interesting to me. You know, to the point where I think Keboom would have been my next pick, but if Keboom was gone, I might have gone with Jones.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got a couple names I throw out there. I think Dakota Hudson was a really good, really great get for the Cardinals at 34. I think they've had a lot of success with, you know, pitchers of that type. He was definitely higher kind of entering the season, and he had a couple injuries that you know, just dragged his stock down. But I do think that's not a bad get. Again, he doesn't fit necessarily that top of the rotation type, but no one really thought Michael Wacha was a top of the rotation guy, and that's kind of how he pitched, you know, for a couple years at least. So I think he's certainly someone to think about later in the draft, because I do think his, you know, where he was picked influences that. Jordan Sheffield, I don't know that he has a great chance to start. I'd probably put it under 50%. Because he's a short guy, he's already had TJ. There's a decent amount of effort, but he does have the stuff that if he is starting, he's interesting. And I'll just pick. Okay, so two more names, just really quickly. Will Smith was the Dodgers pick at 32. When I read about him, I have not watched him a ton. I got kind of an Austin Barnes vibe in terms of athleticism. There's no power, but if you're looking for other categories out of your catcher, I think that's an interesting name. And what was the last one? Nope, I don't remember. So Brett, I'm gonna let you talk about Brett Cumberland.
Yep, I'm definitely gonna talk about Brett Cumberland. There's almost no chance he's gonna stick at catcher, and when I say that, I mean there's probably less of a chance that he sticks at catcher than either Zach Collins or Matt Theis. But dude can hit. And the reason why he's not higher on my list is because I don't think he has the upside to be an above average fantasy first baseman. But in like a deeper league where you know an average first baseman is pretty valuable, and the small chance of him having catcher eligibility is really worthwhile. I think he's someone to absolutely keep an eye on. One other player that I think that people don't really know about, but should, and not just because of where he got picked, is Dylan Carlson, the prep outfielder out of California. This is one of those situations where, you know, they're absolutely nowhere near the same player. They probably have literally nothing in common. But this is what we saw happen with Josh Naylor last year, where there was lots of talk about Naylor being sort of a surprise pick. I'm using scare quotes. You can't see me, but being a surprise pick and being somewhat of an overdraft, and it allowed Naylor to fall in dynasty drafts, and the people who drafted him, I think, got really, really good value. Carlson, I think, is cut from that same cloth. I think the public talk of him being an overdraft, I think, will allow dynasty leaguers to get some really good value on him, because the pop is real, and you know, he's young, and it's going to take a little bit of time, but he's you know, he's got a pretty exciting starting profile.
Yeah, I think the only other player that I would want to bring up, and just it's more of a cool story than anything that's useful for fantasy purposes. But I think it was in the 16th round we saw our first ever native player from Ireland go, and that was Enya Patricia Brennan. And I think she has a great future in this league.
Welcome back to episode 72 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. You guys have been great with the reviews so far, but they've been slowing a little bit so far this season. And you know, just because we're lazy doesn't mean you get to be lazy too. So please do us a favor and hop on and let us know what you think about our podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Cavs do have a chance, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
Better CDs.
That was his. It was his. I just remembered it at the last second. So,
yep.
If anyone actually likes it, I'll take all the credit.